Good morning. Good morning and welcome to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, affectionately known as WUF. My name is Salima Malson. I use the pronouns she and her. And I can't begin to tell you how wonderful it feels to be here in the sanctuary with real people beyond our behind-the-scenes tech heroes, Rick Tangeman, Jim Leonard, and Kayla McBride. I am looking out also at our longtime pianist, Betsy Weston, and our guest speaker, Emmanuel Turan-Turanier, members of our esteemed elders, and our eighth principal study group, all safely distanced, and smiling back at me through their masks. I can tell they're smiling because their eyes are crinkling up. So we are in our last dress rehearsal this morning before we open our doors to limited attendance. And it is my joy and privilege to be part of this service today. For your information, we will be using a reservation system that will give everyone an opportunity to be in the building as we continue to move forward following the guidelines for safe gathering. And just to be clear, we will be continuing to live stream our services for those who aren't ready to join us in person yet. So whatever your circumstances, wherever you are, whoever you are, please know that you are always welcome here. Whatever your age or abilities, color of your skin, or where you were born, whomever you love or how you identify your gender, whatever your spiritual practices may be or if you have none, we are so grateful for you and for our time together. If you are with us virtually this morning, you probably have an order of service as well as an announcement sheet to let you know what's going on around here today and this week. If it's your first time with us, you will probably want to contact our congregational administrator, Pat Lycan, to have your name added to our notification list. And especially this morning, we hope you will join us for our virtual coffee hour starting at 11:30. We will share our joys and sorrows, and we will have Q&A time with our guest speaker. And now, as we prepare to light our chalice, keeping our principles, our UU seven principles in mind, let's remind ourselves that it is freedom and justice, not just yet. Let us remind ourselves that it is freedom and justice that serves as the foundation of the better world that we are all hoping for. But be ready.
Freedom and justice. Shalom, and every come to my neighbor, don't fan. At the end, you look beyond the money, but don't fan. Salut, salam, salam, salut, salam, salam, love, brown, who's shown. Never go PM, never go PM, you get a yellow uniform. Never go PM, never go PM, you get a yellow sack. Never go PM, never go PM, you get a storm out of my
head.
This year, the holiday that is meant to celebrate gratitude was plunked down in the middle of what began as a week of unfathomable tragedy in Waukesha, Wisconsin. This is a time when we are all in such need of comfort and joy, in need of the richness of family and friends and community. And so we light our chalice this morning as the symbol of our shared and scattered faith. May its flame illuminate the common spirit of our diverse and interdependent humanity. May we recognize ourselves in the light of each other's eyes as we stand in solidarity with those who are grieving, those who are hungry, hurting, and despondent. May we reach out our hands and open our hearts to the light that lives in each of us. Let us, in the words of the late Leonard Cohen, ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. And speak with me now, please, our opening affirmation. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another. Our service this morning, the final Sunday of November, follows the history theme that we've been focused on this month. And this morning, we are blessed with the presence of a young man who has journeyed through the history of one of the worst genocides of the 20th century. Emmanuel Turantaranye was born and raised in Rwanda, and he was just 16 years old in 1994 when the country was turned upside down and 800,000 of his people, 800,000 of his people were brutally murdered in just about 100 days. To have survived and have made his way beyond the terror of that time is an extraordinary journey that has brought him to a new life, a new country, a new family, and a new community here in Oregon. It was our own Janet Liu who introduced me to Emmanuel when she passed on an article titled, I Lived in Order to Tell the World. After reading about how Emmanuel had responded to a hateful white supremacist while riding the MAX train, I reached out to him. We met last spring, became friends, and this morning it will be our privilege to hear his story of resilience and hope. Let us get started. This is our time for all ages, and Emmanuel is going to tell us a personal story about a time when it gets too heavy.
Thank you so much. Long time ago, there was a little boy on a continent called Africa, in a little country called Rwanda. He had both parents and he had also six siblings. The boy and his father would travel miles and climb hills to look for water and firewood. They didn't have running water. They didn't even have electricity. And one day, him and his father went to look for water. While he was climbing the hill, that boy was so tired, and he was left behind. And his father, because he was so faster than him, he looked behind him, and he was left behind. Because this little boy was carrying 6-gallon container of water. It was really heavy for him. He didn't even have shoes on his feet. So the stones, the rocks would poke his, under his feet. It was so painful for him. And then his father had to go back and help his boy. Because the heavy 6-gallon water container was so overwhelming weight on this kid. And then his father took it away from him, and then he carried the 6-gallon water container for him. And the boy was really, really, really thankful, because at that moment, all the heavy load he was carrying, his father took it away. And he said to his daddy, "Daddy, I love you so much." So, and the boy said, "Daddy, you're my hero." So I know many people who are watching this, you have heroes in your life. I just want you to take a short moment, just think. Who is your hero? And what makes them your hero? That little boy, it was me. And very, very grateful for my hero, who was my dad. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. So as we settle ourselves in for a few moments of quiet reflection, let us maybe close our eyes, relax, and hear these words from the Reverend Gretchen Haley called The Bright Thread of Hope. There is too much beauty in this world to give up on it yet, and it is always too soon to surrender to cynicism. Bring your doubt, your skepticism, your downright confusion, even your bitterness. But in the midst of it all, in the midst of all of these, in the center, wrap your tender fingers around that still, bright thread of hope. Feel in your heart that still, steady hunger for something more. The vision we glimpse every day of the rising sun across the foothills, the light that spreads across the face of the one we love, the look of knowing all there is to know and still loving life. Loving us just as it is, just as we are. For this hour, we come to celebrate, to praise, to give thanks, to refuse to give up, to steady ourselves. Keepers of hope, brave builders of this still possible world, come, let us worship together.
Many years ago, I was in your darkest place with no hope. I lost my loving family. I was broken, restless. I was lost. No hope for the future. I had no purpose for my life. I thought my life was over. One day, hope found me. I was free. No more crying. No more dying. Here's my peace. No more dying, no more crying. Here's my hope. My hope comes from Jesus, author of the life. Here's my peace. Oh, my hope comes from Jesus, author of my life. Here's my peace. In your life, here's my peace, here's my freedom, here's my everything. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. As she mentioned, my name is Emmanuel Turaturenye, and I was born in Rwanda, and I'm so privileged and honored to be here and share with you about my story of life. I was saved twice, once in the body and once in the spirit, and that's the truth. It was my time to make lunch that day, and I was cooking outside over the fire. I was 16. My baby sister, not quite yet 3, played beside me, and I would give her some food to taste. And the two of us had a special bond. And I was her favorite brother. Yeah. So as I was cooking, I began hearing marching and singing in the distance. People carrying machetes, guns, and clubs. Some I knew in our church. The others I didn't know. And when they started running toward us, I scooped my little sister and ran. I'm a Sunday school baby, a preacher's son. My father was a pastor in the Anglican church. I sang in the choir, read the scripture, and also played drums. I'm a Tutsi, but growing up, I didn't know about two groups in our country because my father never talked about that. As a priest, he served everyone in our community. But in our church, 20% were Tutsi and 80% were Hutu. Hutu and the Tutsis looked the same. You could not tell any difference. Everyone in our country spoke the same language. And the division were about social class and occupation, not physical appearance. The social tension began when Belgians come to divide Rwanda so that they can colonize it. My father preached Easter Sunday, April the 3rd, 1994, and the genocide started that Thursday, April the 7th, 1994. That day, my mom and the oldest born little sister were inside the house. They were killed. My father was visiting some sick people who were sick in the neighborhood. As he was walking home, they caught him and killed him. Our young brother, who was taking care of the goat and sheep in pasture, he was killed there. Our grandma, the house next door, she was killed in her house. Our three cousins who were living with us, they were killed the same day. Our older brother, who was the last born, he was trying to cross the border of Tanzania for his life. And they caught him and they killed him. Our third born brother was living another place at my grandpa, at my mom's side, because he was too young to hold a national ID. So people didn't know he was a Tutsi. For that reason, he was not killed. Of 11 people in our household, only 3 people survived. When the killer comes, I just acted my survival instinct. With my little sister in my arm, I ran, joined the crowd of others who were running for their life. We ran and hid. We ran again. Till the next day we reached the district office, which was a big government building where we thought it would be safe for us. We spent there 3 days with no water, with no food. And then the fourth day they brought us food and we started cooking. But before we could even eat, we were suddenly surrounded with government troops and the militias who started shooting and throwing grenades into the crowd gathered around the cooking pot. When I realized what happened, I shouted to my little sister, "Run!" And I ran too. Luckily for us, there were no fence to the place where we were at. But for the people who were inside government building, there were no escape. My baby sister went one way, and I went another way. At nightfall, we found each other, both of us, just wandering in the street in the neighborhood. When I found her, it was a miracle. I cannot even describe the joy I felt. We spent the next day hiding in the bushes. And the following day, we went to a family friend. She was a Hutu, but a kind of friend who helped no matter what, like an auntie. I went there hoping she would take us in, but I didn't know she would be the same person as she has always been. So I didn't know what to expect. Sometimes people change overnight. Today they're a friend, and tomorrow they're an enemy. When we reached at her house, she was so overjoyed to see us. And she was standing outside of her house. "Were you there in the killing?" she asked us. And she told us 5,000 people were slaughtered that evening. She saw that we were shaking from the hunger. And she fed us. And she promised us that she would do everything in her power to protect us. Her part was the part of the criminals, the militias. Later in the evening, he came to her mom's house. Then he saw us there and asked the mom, "What are these people doing here?" "These are my children now," the mom answered. "If you ever thinking even touch one of them, I will kill you by myself." That's what the mom told her son. From that moment, whenever the killer comes, we would hide under the bed. And then her son would stand outside telling the criminals, the killers, that there was no one here. They would trust his word because he was one of them, one of the killers. The new army called RPF took over the city. And I joined them by helping to put back our country. And later, I earned a degree in agriculture, engineering, and economics. After I graduated, I was working for the government as an agronomist. But no matter how much education you have, trauma always kills your soul. It doesn't matter how smart you are. It always kills your soul. Genocide had already stopped. But I kept seeing it again and over again. I would have some flashbacks of being chased with people with machetes. And I was always anxious, wondering if the killing would start again, or what the next day would look like. So for that reason, I started to numb myself by smoking marijuana and drinking a lot of alcohol. I felt like I had no reason to live. But I didn't want to kill myself. I wanted someone to do it for me. One day, I was high on drugs. And then I come across a policeman, the guy we know each other in the military, in the army. And they tried to grab his gun. "Just shoot me," I shouted. "Get over it." That's what I said. Then he said, "Nope. I know what you're trying to do, but I'm not going to do it for you." And then the following day, I think after like a few days later, I was high again. Just walking, laughing at myself, high. Also high. And while I was walking, and then I heard a voice like a preacher, like my dad's voice. "Emmanuel," the voice said. And then I looked around. And I heard it again. And again. And the voice said, "Do you remember how your father would do everything to make your life better? And he's watching you now. You think he's proud?" That's what the voice said. That's when I did U-turn. I had a cousin, Jen. She had a fellowship she was attending at. And then I told her about my experience, how I heard this kind of weird voice I didn't know. And I explained to her everything. And then she said, "You know, can you meet me to the fellowship?" So I showed up to their fellowship. And then the preacher preached about that story of prodigal son. I think you guys are familiar with that. The one who misused his share and then, you know, all that. That message really touched my heart. And I started to cry. That's when I started remembering my dad. That very day, that's when I quit using drugs. That's when I started healing. Healing is a process. And I'm still in that process. So as I got more involved, you know, I was a church or fellowship minister, was the youth and music pastor in the church. You know, I get to understand who our Creator is, and I started to see His image in myself. So that's when I started forgiving myself. But I also realized I was still being a hypocrite. Because in our church, we had a choir, we had choir members whose family committed genocide. And I always wanted to revenge against them. I would preach, Hutu will go to heaven, but I will never eat with them. But, you know, that's how I felt. I felt really bad in my heart. So hypocritical. That moment I knew that if I didn't release the anger and resentment in my heart, I wouldn't be able to help others. So I knew I had to return to the area where I was born and proclaim forgiveness. And the reconciliation. Forgiveness involves one person, who is you and me, but reconciliation involves two. And I needed both of them. So I went and I did that. Every month in my country, every last Saturday of the month, the community around the country, they gather together and they do public work that needs to get done. So I would travel where I was living in the city and then go attend those meetings. By then, I had my agriculture degree, so I had the privilege to share my agricultural expertise with the villagers. Teach them how to grow food, you know, how to, you know, to produce a lot of food. And then they realized. They knew who I was. They realized I just came to help them, not to accuse them. So after attending many monthly meetings, three families came to me. And then they said, man, we know, you know what we did to your family. But the harm we caused against your family, we are here to repent. I cannot describe how much I really cried in front of them. Because that very moment, I came to understand the spirit of my Father has been doing in my heart. And I was free at last. It was a really long journey. Since I released the anger in my heart, now I sleep peacefully. I sleep peacefully. I always tell this story so that what happened to us never happened to the rest of the world. I can't change the past, but I can change the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you. today. And the dark secret night didn't I make to myself. What a wonderful world.
The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky. A whole show on the faces of people going by.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Now's the time in our service when we pause to reflect on the gifts that we have received from our abundant earth and the generous spirit of family and community, to consider what it is that we have given and what it is that we are grateful for. During the musical interlude, please consider the gifts that you have to offer our WWF community, whether it be financial support or the special gift of your time or talent. Know that we are grateful for your offerings. And let us remember also that it is love that has built our community. Love that built the fires that warm us, that planted the trees that shade us. We are ever grateful for all of the early stewards of this land, beginning with the original peoples, the indigenous tribes, many of whom live among us today and to whom our doors are always open. WWF exists because of the generous spirit and commitment of all those who came before us, just as our future health depends on the dedication and commitment of those here now. Join me, please, in our affirmation of gratitude and giving. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others. And before we extinguish our chalice, I would like to just say that we are going to delay the start of our virtual coffee hour by 15 minutes this morning. So if you're out there watching and want to join us, and I hope you will, for our virtual coffee hour Q&A time with Emmanuel and sharing our joys and sorrows, please tune us in at 11:45. And now, as we extinguish the flame of our chalice and begin the week that lies ahead, whatever it may bring, let us remember that there is too much beauty in this world to give up on it yet. And it is always too soon to surrender to cynicism. Let us carry within us the warmth and light of our time together until we meet again.